All right, so probably the most requested video that I get on this channel is something on giving a guide to pro wrestling terminology or terms or insider terms as they apply to politics. People who have been watching me for a while will know whether I am analyzing normal mainstream politics. It could be Boris Johnson or Donald Trump or whoever, or Nigel Farage now, and Keir Starmer even. It doesn't really matter who I'm talking about. I talk in pro wrestling terms about mainstream politics. I also have applied this pro wrestling kind of lens when I've analyzed things like, podcaster feuds and things like that. Back when it was Tucker Carlson against the Mark Levins and so on, or Nick Fuentes against Ben Shapiro, all of these kind of podcast feuds also have some element of pro wrestling to them. And in this video, I'm going to break down lots and lots of pro wrestling terms, all of which at some point or another I have used. I actually sat down and thought, what do I actually routinely say that, you know, I say it quickly, I say it without thinking, and usually there's somebody in the comments saying, what did you say at that point again, or what does that term mean? And that's why people ask me to make this video. Just before we get going, I'll remind people there is a sale on still in January, or all of January until the end. There is the January sale at the Academic Agency, 25% off all courses. Promo code is SHORJAN, SHORJAN, and with that, you'll get a quarter of the price off. If you pick up Foundations of Shakespeare on that sale, and you send the receipt to the publisher of Foundations of Shakespeare, the book, you will get 50% off the retail price of that book. Okay, so with all of that said, let's get going, because there's quite a number of terms to get through. Hopefully you can all see this. Let's see where I can put it so that I'm not, it's not in front of my face. Okay, I'm gonna have to get like a little stand for this, little tiny little whiteboard that I bought. Okay, so the first word that is important in the top, left, I guess it is, as you're looking at it, is kayfabe. What does kayfabe mean? This is a term that I've heard some people mispronounce, right? They call it where they're kind of, they've heard me say it, or they've seen me write it somewhere, and then, you know, they call it kayfabe or something like that. But it's kayfabe. What does that term mean? It simply means suspension of disbelief. Everybody knows that wrestling is not real. It is predetermined. It is scripted. They are actors playing parts. And just like everybody watching a movie knows that a movie is not real, that it's actors watching a part, playing a part, okay? And it's scripted. It's got Hollywood writers there providing the things that people are saying, okay? And there's a director there, you know, saying, directing the camera, you know, picking which camera shots to use and which takes to use and which music to use and all the rest of it. And there's a producer, and all of these other kind of people that you don't see on screen are actually the people who've made the film. And everybody understands, though, that when you're watching a movie, you suspend your disbelief, you buy into, you could say, the kayfabe of the movie, and you forget that the character on the screen is an actor, right? Really, it's Al Pacino, right? The man there. You forget that, and you buy into the fact that it's an actual character. You know, it's Tony Montana from Cuba or something like this, not Al Pacino from New York. So this is, everybody does this almost automatically when they're watching movies, okay? Now, when we apply it to politics, and I do have an essay that I wrote years ago. It's in the book Applied Elite Theory, if you bought that. But it's also on my Substack, The Forbidden Text, which you'll be able to find on Substack. I'll sticker. You can see I remember I wrote it to Giant Geo, who's a fellow pro wrestling fan, where I talked about kayfabe and politics. The kayfabe in politics, at the top line, is something like there's a struggle between the left and the right, the Tories and Labour, or the Republicans and the Democrats, and that this is the most important thing ever. In America, the wrestling kayfabe, the politics kayfabe is, if the Democrats take over, it's the end of the country or something like this. Or if you're a blue-haired feminist or something, you're a Democrat. If you're a liberal, if the Republicans take over, if Trump takes over, it's the end of the country as you know it. Therefore, this is the most important election of our lifetimes. Okay, that is the kayfabe of American politics, kayfabe of British politics. That's the top line. It does go a bit further, though. It goes into what can and cannot be discussed, who can and cannot be discussed, who are named faces in the family of faces, and who are not. Okay, these are all things I've talked about before. But this is kayfabe, right? Now, the term on this side here, if you are somebody who watches wrestling and believes that it is real, and when we were kids, we all knew somebody like that. Well, when I was a kid, most people knew somebody like that, and there was a rumor that it wasn't real or something like this. I think if you're a little bit younger, maybe, there was a whole generation that grew up knowing that Santa Claus wasn't real, knowing that wrestling was fake from the very off, because kayfabe was broken at some point in pro wrestling history. But that is, if you're somebody who believes in all of that stuff, you are a mark. Okay, that comes from pro wrestling started out as a kind of sideshow on the carnival. It was like a carnival sideshow. Right, this is where this term carny comes about. I haven't put carny down there, even though I've used it, because it's kind of it's more of a general term than a wrestling term. But from the carny days of pro wrestling, when it was a sideshow, what they used to do is they would have a wrestler come to town, part of the circus, something like this, and they would be like, "Who from the crowd will challenge the great strongman Otto or whatever?" And somebody would volunteer and they would be picked, okay? And basically what would happen is, because they wanted to make sure that Otto won, the guy who was picked would actually be a plant, right? He would be a worker, he'd be a wrestler himself, right? But disguised as a member of the public, okay? So back in those days, they were trying to scam the punters to pay money to see this ringer, this worker, go up against Otto the Strongman. Okay. And those punters were known as marks. So within the wrestling business, they call punters marks. People who pay good money because they believe that it's real. They believe that Andre the Giant actually sold out to Bobby the Brain Heenan, and that Hulk Hogan is a hero, and that he actually needs to take down this giant villain, Andre. They believe, they bought into the storyline, and they've paid money because they want to see the payoff, the blow off to the storyline. That's a mark, okay? Sometimes you'll hear them called money mark. They're a money mark. And just like in pro wrestling, how you can get a mark or a money mark, also in the world of politics, you can get marks. Okay, this is your classic Tory boy. They're marks to some extent, but many other marks are available. I would say in the current political landscape, the biggest kayfabe is MAGA. People who truly believe that Donald Trump is their guy, that he's there for them, that he's battling for them, that they've bought in to the MAGA myth, if you want to put it that way. And those people are marks. When I say they're marks or money marks, in the case of MAGA, they are quite literally scammed, fleeced over and over and over again in the most naked way imaginable. So, yeah, that is a mark. In contrast to the mark, the people who know that wrestling isn't real are smart fans. They are people who are aware that it is scripted. They are aware that it is quote unquote fake, right? They're aware that they are actors playing the part, and they're called smart. The reason the word smart is used, it's basically smart to the business is the whole phrase. They are smart to the business. And in politics terms, okay, I would say there are surprisingly few people who are smart all the way. Some people are. We can go into who soon. But a surprising number of people remain marks in the realm of politics as opposed to being smart. I should mention these terms down this left side as well. Work and shoot basically refer to the act of maintaining kayfabe. So the whole business of putting on the illusion of the wrestling match, okay, and the wrestling match itself, the whole show, is a work. Okay, so the word work, or being worked, you're working the marks. When Otto the Strongman back in the old Carney days, and whoever the pretend punter is who put his hand up, and then they go, and the guy from the crowd, he goes and he hits Otto, right? He tries to smack Otto in the face, and it bounces off him because Otto's so strong. And you know, the guy who's volunteered, the worker, he staggers back, right? He staggers back and he's shocked, and then Otto advances and the guy backs down. Okay, this is a work. Okay, when Otto strikes our volunteer and it hits him, you know, it hits him for like he flies across the ring. Yeah, that's called selling, right? He's selling the offense, but it's still an aspect of working the marks to maintain that illusion. And you're the mark in the crowd, you're being worked by professional con artists, if you want to put it that way. That would be an unkind. I mean, I'm a pro wrestling fan, so I appreciate the art, okay? But the art is working the marks, okay? The opposite of work is shoot. Okay, shoot. Shoot simply means actual legitimate. It's gone off script. It's real. Okay, and it goes back to all the way back to those Carney days when it's Otto the Strongman. Now let's pretend that they didn't have the ringer in the crowd and it was a genuine member of the public who went up there, okay, up against Otto the Strongman. If Otto was what is known as a shooter, he would have legitimate amateur wrestling skills. He would have legitimate amateur wrestling skills. And because of that, obviously our punter legitimately wouldn't have any chance because it was a shoot. It was an actual match. These days, that's MMA, basically, right? But back then, it was just a shoot match. And, you know, Otto would know what to do, how to bend his arm, how to get the guy to submit in five seconds, how to break his nose, whatever it happened to be, okay? And as pro wrestling developed, it would be important for the champion, Luthez, famous example, but there were others, Pat O'Connor, Dory Funk Jr. to some extent as well, even as late as that. It would be important for the champion to have amateur credentials and genuine shoot ability. Why? Because when they were going from town to town, the champion would travel all around the world. Okay, it'd be possible that some of these other wrestlers would go into business for themselves. They'd go into business for themselves, quote unquote. Okay, i.e., the match was booked for the champion to win. The challenger wants the belt. He actually goes into business and he tries to, you know, there and then in front of the crowd, defeat the champion legit, okay? So it was important for the champion to have some shoot credentials so that if anybody tried anything on, they'd have their ass handed to them, okay? And there were people who were within the business who were famous for being shooters. Carl Gotch was a very famous shooter, okay? I'm trying to think of some other examples, like Les Thornton. It would usually be guys from an amateur who had a good amateur background. Bob Backlund, who was the WWF champion before Hulk Hogan, he was a strong guy and he was a shooter. If anybody tried it on, he'd know how to do it. And in Japan, a lot of the guys there had Olympic backgrounds. They could shoot. Jumbo Tsuruta, you know, could shoot. Inoki was a shooter. So, yeah, it was that. That's where these terms work and shoot come from. And in the political terms, the difference between a work and a shoot is pretty important. And there are times where I'm convinced that some of the arguments that you see are kayfabe, they are worked, right? Other times, people are going into business for themselves and it becomes a shoot, right? Where it's personal, where client, where lines are crossed, where... And the person who it's very... I mean, in the current context, Donald Trump is so pro-wrestling himself that people are always wondering, is he working or is he shooting? Is it work or is it shoot? As I'm recording this, okay, there's all this stuff about Greenland and everybody's like, is this real? Is this actually happening? Are they working us or is it shoot? And it becomes important. Like, for example, that stuff, the rumble in the Oval Office with Zelensky, where Zelensky was humiliated by Trump. Brian Beletic, who's a very serious geopolitical analyst, maintains that was a work. That he was basically selling something to the crowd, selling something to all of us, the marks, selling a division of labor plan, according to Brian Beletic. Okay, so he was saying it was a work. Whereas for people who buy into a lot of political kayfabe, everything is a shoot, everything is legit, everything is actually happening. There's never any works. Talking in these terms is conspiratorial for somebody of that sort of mind. Okay, so anyway. Let's carry on. I should say there are also the smart marks, which is probably most wrestling fans these days. That is people who know a lot of this stuff I'm telling you now, but they still enjoy watching wrestling anyway. And there you can suspend their disbelief and become like 12-year-old marks again or 6-year-old marks again even, you know, to enjoy a match. They can switch their analytical brain off and watch it just like you'd watch a popcorn movie. That's a smart mark. Now, the smart fans, the ones who knew the inner workings, used to read something called the dirt sheets, okay? The dirt sheets. The most famous dirt sheet was the Wrestling Observer. It's still going, by the way. It's an online publication now. But back in the 80s and the early 90s, people would actually have these delivered to their homes. It was a actually mailed newsletter. And the newsletter would have all of the internal gossip, all of the kind of what's happening behind the scenes, who's gonna work where, who's leaving, who's coming, who's going. It's kind of insider talk, okay? Insider talk. And in politics terms, there is definitely, right, the equivalent of dirt sheets, and there's also the equivalent of the next phrase here, the aptamag. The aptamag. What is an aptamag? This was something like Pro Wrestling Illustrated. There were many, even WWF magazine or WWE magazine at some point. These were magazines written maintaining kayfabe, i.e. writing like you'd have an interview in there with, you know, the Barbarian and the Warlord as if they were real guys, or the British Bulldog. Oh, the British Bulldogs are really concerned about their dog Matilda, right? As if that was all real, okay? Whereas in the dirt sheet, Dave Meltzer writing about that same storyline would be like, the WWF are working a storyline with the British Bulldogs against Bobby the Brain Heenan and the Heenan family, where their dog Matilda is being kidnapped. this angle is going to run, like this angle, right? This angle took place on blah, blah, blah. The feud is going to run until this day. You know, people backstage say, I don't know, Davey Boy Smith is unhappy with this angle, or, you know, Dynamite Kid doesn't like the direction that this is going in creatively, blah, blah, blah. He thinks it's too kiddie, something. So they would actually give the dirt, right? They give the story, what was going on in the background. The Aptamag maintains the illusion of the on-screen product, okay? Now, in politics terms, I would say there are very few dirt sheets, okay? I mentioned Dave Meltzer there. He's the most famous kind of wrestling journalist, okay? And the Wrestling Observer is the most famous dirt sheet. And I have to say, I look across the landscape, I see what else is out there. And I've, as I've said before, the Dave Meltzer of politics is me, friends. The Wrestling Observer is this channel. It's me. Now, there were other dirt sheets. It wasn't just Observer and Meltzer. There was Brian Alvarez. I can't remember all the names of them now, but there was like Wrestling Hotline or something. What was it called? There were different ones in the 80s and the 90s from other people. They existed too. And they were kind of like, they circulated among these hardcore wrestling fans and also among some of the wrestlers themselves. Right, Terry Funk was known to take an interest. Jim Cornette were, you know, contributed, things like this. And I would say, as well as me, my buddies Scrump and Evelyn are also clearly some sort of dirt sheet. And possibly they, and you see, this is the thing, because Dave Meltzer is the best known, there's all sorts of like, he had kind of like known contacts and things, but there's it also got political. So there's certain people he wouldn't trash talk and things like that. Whereas some of those other ones, they'd actually give all the dirt. And in a way, Scrump and Evelyn are one of those. Okay, they're the kind of one of those to my Dave Meltzer. That's how it kind of currently works. There are other people out there who take this sort of lens, who give you the dirt sheet view. A lot of I would say vast majority of publications are marks, right? They're just straight up. Act as if everything that you see on screen is real. They don't give you any of the smart perspective on this at all. Okay. However, there are some people who are kind of in between. I mean, I would argue, and this is not necessarily a dig at him, but I do think I've seen enough to see this is where he stands. Aaron McIntyre basically maintained a lot of kayfabe. He maintained a lot of the, you know, it's all about the left. It's all about the Democrats, GOP framing, right? He maintains, but he sprinkles his stuff with smart terminology, with insider terms. He presents himself as somebody kind of in between the mark and the smart. And this is the smart mark, okay? And he's probably the best example I can think of where he maintains just enough kayfabe to keep the mark strung along, but he clearly also advertises that he knows a bit better as well. It's kind of a gray zone, right, in between. And there are other figures. I mean, you can come up with your own examples, but there are other figures who do that to some extent. Okay. What else have we got here? Okay, so in pro wrestling, most matches come down to a villain versus a hero, a bad guy versus a good guy. Now, they would never be called good guys and bad guys in the kayfabe, right? The commentators and the presenters would never say, here's our good guy hero coming down here and there's the evil villain. They generally use terms like fan favorite. Hulk Hogan's a fan favorite. Okay, and then the bad guys would be rule breakers. Oh, he's a rule breaker. Or even if they want to be, Gordon Solie would say, well, I don't really like the attitude that he's taken recently. He's come under a bad influence. So they'd be more subtle about it. But it's always really clear. The good guy gets cheered by the fans. Everybody loves him. The bad guy breaks the rules, uses dirty tactics, you know, does villainous stuff, and the crowd boo them. Okay? They either loudly cheer or they loudly boo. That is kayfabe. Okay? And in the parlance, the good guy, the hero, is known as a babyface or simply a face. Okay? The face. And the bad guy is known as the heel. So you get a babyface or you get a heel. And you get babyface runs. That is a run. I should have put run on here. Hold on a minute. Run. So back in the days, wrestling was territorial. Okay. But even now, there are several different companies, right? And basically, pro wrestlers go on runs. They have 6 months with a company, a year with a company, 2 years with a company. However long that takes, it's known as a run. And then once they've got stale or the fans have got enough for them or they've run out of stuff to do, typically it's time for them to move on and they'll go to another company and have another run. And typically for the duration of their run, they're either a heel or they're a babyface. Okay? Now, you can become, even if you're a heel, you can become a good guy, babyface. Or if you're a babyface, you can turn. Let's say on a friend, you hit your friend with a steel chair, or as probably the most famous one, Shawn Michaels, savate kick on Marty Jannetty through the barbershop glass. He becomes a heel. The Rock is split up. Jannetty's the babyface. This is known as a turn. In that case, it was a heel turn. Okay, and people can turn from babyface to heel or from heel to babyface. It's known as a turn. Okay. So, and then you can have a babyface run or a heel run. Now, I talked last year about Fuentes going on a babyface run, okay? And in that case, I was talking about the kayfabe of the kind of, like, there's a weird podcaster, like American podcaster kayfabe, where there are feuds. You know, he feuds with Candice Owens or... You know, Tucker Carlson feuds with Ben Shapiro, stuff like this, okay? Within that kayfabe, Nick, in my view, was going on a babyface run. And lots of people have been saying that since he's been cheering on Venezuela and doing all these sorts of other things, that in their view, he has, quote, turned heel. So you'll see that parlance. I'm still not sure what to make of all of that myself. But there we go, yeah. And then... there's also an angle, right? An angle is basically part of a little event that sets off a storyline. So when I mentioned Shawn Michaels kicked Marty Jannetty through the glass, that was an angle. It was an angle used as a device to turn Michaels heel. And in politics, okay, just as in pro wrestling, there are little events, there are little things that happen, there are stuff that happens that are angles, okay? Trump going on about Greenland is an angle. It's an angle. It's part, and now it's become a storyline because he keeps on saying it over and over again. There are little stunts. There are little things that happen that are angles within politics. Okay. There's also push. A push is basically somebody who has been selected by the bookers of pro wrestling. And this is, see, there's so many terms I forgot. The person in charge of putting together all the matches and all the stories is known as the booker, okay? The booker. Often there'd be a team and there'd be a head booker, right? In the case of WWF, WWE, the owner was Vince McMahon and he took a very strong interest in the booking, so he often intervened quite a lot. But technically the booker, I believe, for a long time was Pat Patterson. But Vince had so much kind of, it basically ended up being like a Lennon and McCartney. They were kind of co-bookers, or even you just say, well, Vince was booking it himself. Okay. But anyway, in terms of creative, in terms of what's happening, sometimes for whatever reason, the bookers see potential in somebody and they give them a push. What is a push? They give them lots of wins. They give them lots of screen time. They give them lots of interviews. They give them lots of stories. They give them lots of stuff to do, right? And they're pushed. And I mentioned Fuentes. A lot of people who know this sort of parlance, said that last year there was a moment where it seemed like he was being pushed for whatever reason. Okay. There are many, many other examples of people who are pushed for whatever reason. And then you can also get the opposite. You can get a de-push, or people who are de-emphasized, or people who are never put in the limelight and things like that as well. But yeah, that's what a push is. Then, as part of a storyline, I mean, the end of a storyline is, as I mentioned, is called a blow-off. That's the big match. You know, it's Hulk Hogan versus King Kong Bundy in a cage, or whatever it is. It's the big thing that ends the feud. It's the big, after that, there's no more story, okay? Because it's been leading to this point. It's the blow-off, okay? Magnum TA against Tully Blanchard in the I Quit cage match at Starrcade. It's a blow-off. It's a blow-off, okay? But lots of the time, fans get smart, and they kind of try to second guess where the booking is going. And just like with real life, just like with politics, and people say, well, I can see where this is going. A million miles off, I can see where this is going. It's obvious where this is going. Sometimes the bookers decide to swerve. That is, they, just like The Last Jedi, subvert your expectations and do something different. And that's called a swerve. Everybody thought it was going this way, and then it goes that way. And again, with the example of Fuentes, right, which lots of people have used, this pioneered by me, right, but only done well by me, I have to say. Other people's attempts are poor, generally, okay? But lots of people argued that he was pushed, right? And then we got a swerve when he started appearing to shill for neocon stuff, okay? Now, again, I don't want to give an opinion on that myself. I still need to see how that plays out. But from a certain point of view, it looks like a swerve. Looked like he was going this way, looked like everything was going this way. Then we were swerved that way, okay? Put over simply means when somebody puts somebody else over. Going over in pro wrestling parlance just means winning a match, okay? And in politics terms, putting over could refer to an election, or it could refer to a debate between podcasters or something like that, where somebody is put into a spot when they're put over. Now, in my view, this happens quite a lot in the podcasting world, where Piers Morgan has somebody on and then he puts them over by kind of, you know, doing the job for them. Speaking of which, a jobber in pro wrestling, a jobber, if you're familiar with My Regime Wanted Trump, Kamala Harris was a jobber, stuff from a couple of years back. A jobber is simply somebody who's paid to lose matches in pro wrestling. Somebody who puts, whose basic job it is to put other people over continually. And back in the days, they used to have jobbers who did nothing but lose. They'd lose on television over and over again. You know, Frankie Williams would be the archetypical jobber, right? And a jobber is simply that. And I use that term continually about Kamala Harris. I also think Rishi Sunak was put in as a jobber when he became prime minister, because maybe Boris Johnson didn't want to put over anybody over, or maybe, who knows, but he was put in there to lose. It's that much is obvious. And this sort of stuff happens, right? You see one of the parties calculate, we're not going to win this. We'll stick in a jobber. Kamala Harris, I don't care what anyone says, she was a jobber. She was a jobber. That analysis by me has stood the test of time. Many of my analyses have stood the test of time, okay? Because there's something to this, okay? There's something to this. All the doubters continually get egg in their face. Me, never. Okay, so, heat. Okay, we talked about, all right, so being over. So there's the sense of putting somebody else over or going over, right? If you put somebody else over, you're losing. If you're going over, you're winning the match. But there's also being over with the crowd. This sense of over is how well established are you with the crowd? How loudly do they cheer you? How excited are they to see you? And if they're very excited, right, if you've got white heat, if you're white hot, you're really over, okay? And then a closely related term is heat. Heat is simply, if you're a bad guy, if you're a heel, how much do people hate you? How much heat do you have on you? Right? When Ted DiBiase came in as the $1 million man and he had that small little black kid and he said, bounce the basketball 10 times and I'll give you $100. Okay? And this kid was bouncing the basketball and he gets to 8, he gets to 9. DiBiase kicks the ball away, doesn't give him the $100 and says, you didn't do the job, so you don't get the money. And the little kid's almost in tears. Crowd going absolutely apoplectic. That was DiBiase generating heel heat. Okay? When Ravishing Rick Rude would get on the mic and he'd say, all you fat slobs in the crowd, shut up. So that all your women out there, your wife, all the ladies out there, can get a look at what a real sexy man looks like. That was Ravishing Rick Rude generating heat on himself, making himself hated by the crowd. And again, if you think this doesn't happen in politics terms, I think you're wrong. I mean, I think to some extent Mark Levin was deliberately generating heat on himself last year. I mean, he could just be so boorish and so stupid he didn't know what he was doing. Somehow I doubt that. I also think that, I mean, I've mentioned Fuentes a number of, I mean, there's definitely times where I'm watching Nick cut a promo, which is a heel promo, right? He's definitely, like, he has moments where his intention is to rile people up. Okay, and I've seen that, you know, over the time of watching him. Definitely there are some promos he cuts for heel heat. Okay. There are some other things here. And I think Trump does this as well, by the way, heat. Like some of the stuff where he's trying to like irritate and rile up his European allies over Greenland at the moment. Or, you know, he pokes, he antagonizes, he tries to push a position by poking. This is Trump generating heel heat, okay? Another aspect in wrestling is that obviously some people are very over. They're very well established. They're very well known. Newcomers, green, by the way, is the name for an inexperienced worker, okay? But new people coming through need to be established. They need to kind of get over in the eyes of a new crowd, okay? Maybe you don't know this person. And there is a what they call transferring heat. You can transfer your overness or heat onto somebody else, and it's called giving them a rub. Giving them a rub, okay? And the logic here is very simple. You like Hulk Hogan. You like Hulk Hogan. You're his biggest fan. So, therefore, if Hulk Hogan brings in a buddy and he says, like, I love this guy here, he's my best friend, or he's one of my great friends, he gets a rub from that. And some aspect of Hogan's overness and his popularity rubs off on the guy he's bringing in. And because Hogan was the most over guy in the 80s in WWF, they did this a lot. To establish new heroes. They did it with Brutus Beefcake. They did it with Tugboat. They did it with Hillbilly Jim to some extent. Guys like who, just through their association with Hogan, were also good guys who were also liked by the crowd. Okay? That's an opportunity for that wrestler. Obviously, they need the talent then to maintain that level of overness. And even in some of those examples there, some of them didn't have that. They weren't able to run with the opportunity, but that is a rub. And the same thing is true of the heels, who can try to transfer their heat over, you know, through a rub. They used to do this a lot in the 70s, you know, in New York, in WWWF, as it was at the time. There were the three wise men, Fred Blassie, Grand Wizard, and Lou Albano, Captain Lou. And, you know, they'd have a continuous conveyor belt of heels coming through to challenge Bruno Sammartino or later Bob Backlund, okay, to challenge the champ. It would be like a conveyor belt, like a Batman's villain. You know, this week it's the Joker, next week it's the Penguin, the week after it's the Riddler, okay? But in order to establish them as villains in the eyes of the fans, they had one of these managers, okay, later, probably the Brain Heenan, even after that, even in the Attitude Era, it was Mr. McMahon himself, it was Vince, okay? But they'd have these guys as established villains and then stick the new guy coming in with the manager, and that would be a rub, okay? And again, if you think this stuff doesn't happen in politics, it does. I mean, look at British politics just in the last week. There have been tons of turns from Tory to Reform, right? Tory defections to Reform, Reform unveiling their new guys, and Farage has been trying to transfer some of his overness to give the rub to Robert Jendrick, to that Iraqi guy, to the one before that. You know what I mean? So all of these, once you understand these mechanisms, you can then see them play out in actual real life. Okay. Podcasters too do this too. They deliberately book people onto their shows and try to give them the rub, try to get them over, try to give them exposure, okay, or try to generate heat for them. And all of these things work, okay? And they don't just work. See, the thing is, people are really kind of don't see the wood for the trees a lot of the time, okay? They think, well, this guy has booked this other guy onto this podcast, and they don't agree. They seem to hate each other, okay? Baby faces and heels, remember? Baby faces and heels. So let's pretend somebody, Piers Morgan's a good example, but there are others, books somebody onto their show, okay, and then has an adversarial conversation with them. Are they booking that person in order to bury them? This is a burial, by the way, is when somebody is just destroyed in a match. They're buried. Okay, they're made to look really crap, awful. Burial often happens as a punishment to somebody who hasn't done what they've been told. A burial, they're destroyed. Okay, a match where they're made to look so weak, the fans won't buy them as a threat afterwards. I would argue that on British national television, on the BBC, Nick Griffin was buried by the BBC Question Time, right? They attempted to destroy Griffin on that show. A burial, okay? So that's what a burial looks like. But you can also have a scenario where you're putting someone on your show, you're presenting them to your crowd as a heel, right? You're playing the baby face. But actually what you're doing is you're trying to get this person over in a dialectical way, okay? And again, you may think this doesn't happen, but it does. And once you understand the mechanics of pro wrestling booking, you will then understand a little bit more some of the mechanics of podcast kayfabe booking, or specifically political podcast kayfabe booking. Okay? So this stuff does happen. All right, I've gone for 45 minutes now. There are many other things I should mention. There are different ways to win a match. One of the going over clean, what they call clean, right? 1, 2, 3 in the middle is the strongest way to win. you can have a tainted win where the person cheats, or they use a weapon, or their manager interferes for them, or they have a handful of tights, or they have their foot on the ropes. That's a tainted win. Clean win is simply just in the middle, 1, 2, 3. Then there's also like, a kind of less satisfactory finish. It's a count out. It's a disqualification. It's a draw. And these are ways of protecting, because losing clean in the middle is the biggest blow to a wrestler's momentum, whereas winning clean in the middle, you know, is putting that person over pretty strongly. That's one of the reasons they use jobbers, because it hurts star to see them lose clean too often on TV. But again, in politics terms, these things happen. Kamala Harris put over Donald Trump clean, whereas Donald Trump did not put over Joe Biden clean. What do I mean by that? Well, in the Kamala Harris case, there was no shenanigans. There was no accusations of fraud. There was no question marks over the transfer of power. Whereas in Joe Biden's case, his victory was tainted. There were accusations of cheating. Lots of people, even now, do not believe that he got 81 million votes. Donald Trump called foul. Donald Trump said the machines were rigged. Donald Trump said there was mass fraud. Donald Trump said, you know all of it, okay? And in a way, the persecutions of Trump and so on in the run-up to the Kamala Harris victory were an angle that established him firmly as the babyface in the run-up to that victory, because it seemed like he was Stone Cold Steve Austin up against the machine, up against a corrupt establishment, and all of this stuff helped get Donald Trump over the line, right, in 2024. So all of these terms do apply in real life. You see them again and again. In the podcasting world, clean. What would a clean win look like? It's basically where somebody demolishes somebody else. Recently, Anna Kasparian defeated Pearl Davis clean in the middle of the ring in an embarrassing display for Pearl Davis. This is just a clean. This is what clean victory looks like. Okay. So anyway, let me know if you have any questions about this. This ended up being quite a bit longer than I was expecting, but it's been a long time coming. Hope you enjoyed it. Pick up a course at the Academic Agency. Promo code SHORJAN gets you 25% off all courses, and I'll see you next time. If you liked this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the Academic Agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just 3 of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.